The following program is brought to you in living color.
A clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going. Let's drink. Me from my glass, and you from yours.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Why is it people who can't take advice always insist on giving it?
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about wine but were afraid to ask. That's what we're here for. We are your media resource for everything about that darling little grape. Well, today we're going to have fun, and as usual, if we're having fun, that means I'm going to get off tangent. And We sit back and we talk a lot about wine. We talk about the vineyards. We've been very fortunate. We've had great guests on the show, whether it's from vineyard management companies, whether it's winemakers, whether it's critics. But ultimately, if you sat back and you asked everybody, what is the most damaging thing that can happen to the wine industry? People will give you all kind of different answers. They talk about phylloxera, of course, the bugs, the louse. They talk about Mother Nature. We talked about 2010 harvest a lot and what a dismal harvest it was. They talk about developers. If we remember some shows, we've gotten into the fact that the land grants of Napa and Sonoma have always caused problems. But ultimately, if you want to focus it down to the one thing that has done more damage to the wine business than anything else, Kent, do you have a guess?
I have no guess whatsoever. What more damaging?
What has been the most damaging thing to ever happen to the wine business, to vineyards, anything?
I would think the economy more than anything.
The economy definitely has played a big part, certainly has hurt a lot of wineries and caused a lot to go out of business. But when it comes down to it, when we look at the world scope, the most damaging thing to have ever happened to the wine business in the United States was Prohibition.
Hmm.
The government got involved, and it went to hell after that. There were no two ways about it. So it will be our endeavor today to take a look at Prohibition, how it impacted the wine business, how it still impacts the wine business today, and to just kind of, I don't know, peel the covers back.
Do you mean that it still impacts the wine business today?
It still impacts the wine business today. Horribly so, as a matter of fact. And we'll get in some details. We'll get in some different things about that. But what's stemming this is, one, it is the anniversary. When you look at Prohibition, it was repealed essentially 90 years ago this week, yeah. And it's still doing some pretty hefty damage. But also, we have our guest today, Miss Vivian Sanowski. She wrote the book When the Rivers Ran Red, and it's a new release. At least it's something that's come to me as a new release, and it's the history of Napa and Sonoma during Prohibition. What happened to the vineyards? What happened to the families? What happened to the people? Because ultimately, even back 1917, when all this truly got its head start, this was Napa and Sonoma. There were more wineries there then, almost, than there are right now. And as things progressed, and obviously it became illegal to make wine, it's the stories of what happened to everybody during that time.
It's amazing that we ever thought that that was going to solve something.
And they continue to think it solves something. And it's interesting, if you really sit down and look at Prohibition, to see really how few people got together, got this started, and made it into what it was then and what it is today. It started state by state by state, whether it was Georgia and James Oglethorpe back in 1700s, whether it was Maine, and just to see the groundswell movement. At least, thankfully, we had enough sense in 33 to repeal it, but by then the damage was done. Now, of course, I'm sure people will talk about Prohibition, how it'd be great today that people didn't drink. But I think back then, if you had looked at it more from an educated perspective, let's educate the consumer, let's educate the populace, then perhaps we wouldn't be where we are now.
But surely there was an underground wine industry.
Of course not.
Just as there was.
Everybody was legal. You know, certainly no illegal activities came out of Prohibition whatsoever.
Not at all.
Zero. Zilch. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But fortunately, we live in times where you can go to your local Mega Mart and pick up whatever beverage of choice you would like it to be. And if you're going to stop by your local Mega Mart, I do have two wine recommendations for you today. The first is a new release And I know some of you out there who are true aficionados are going to say this is just another brand extension. This is just something new. But Kendall Jackson, I will say the largest producer of Chardonnay in the United States and probably the most consumed high-dollar Chardonnay, has come out with a new line. It's called Kendall Jackson Avant, and it's a Chardonnay. And the whole point of this, I have to admit this, when it comes to day-in, day-out drinking, if you're just going to have a baseline Chardonnay that can appeal to everyone, Kendall Jackson Vintner's Reserve Chardonnay certainly is that. But what they have done with Avant, it is pure, it is elegant, it truly expresses the fruit as opposed to the oak. A lot of us do like oak in our wines, but what Avant is doing is it's making it very simple. It's very clean. You get a lot of the pineapple, you get green apple, you get all the citrus, you get all the great stuff without being overwhelmed by vanilla, without being overwhelmed by the oak. So it is clean. And what's neat, it's fun to see the minerality start coming back through in these wines. Ultimately, it's a lighter form of Chardonnay. It's not as heavy-bodied as the original KJ Vintners, but it is absolutely outstanding. They have put this together from Monterey, Santa Barbara, Mendocino, and it's just best clean, wonderful, pure. As we start getting into the springtime, as weather, I hope, cooperates and it gets warmer and we see less snow and ice, this will be a great way to welcome in the spring. So look forward. It is just released. It is Kendall Jackson Avant. And Avant, for those of you who are wondering, it comes from the French word for before. I'm not really sure if I understand how that all applies. I just know I like the wine, and whether it's before or after, we do enjoy it. So there's your white wine recommendation, KJ Avant Chardonnay. As far as a red, Rodney Strong Alexander Valley Cabernet. We had talked on a previous show about the fact that in Sonoma, you're now going to have Alexander Valley and Sonoma on this. So, of course, Rodney Strong Alexander Valley Cabernet comes from Sonoma. And for the price point, it is outstanding. It's very rich. It's very deep. It's very complex. You get a lot of black fruit on this. You get a little bit of that nice cedar box eucalyptus-y kind of flavor that some of us like. And it's very well distributed, meaning it's not one of these things that's going to be difficult to find. So when you're going to your local Mega Mart, both these wines will be readily available. Rodney Strong, Alexander Valley Cabernet, and Kendall Jackson Avant Chardonnay. See, it's just so nice to know that we can just rattle these off and have no problem with them whatsoever.
And today I learned that avant is the French word for before.
See, we have to give we give the French credit here and there.
They just created everything, didn't they?
They tried to, yes.
Yeah.
But see,
or at least take credit for it.
Well, in all honesty, when it comes to wine, yes, they did create everything.
Yeah.
It would be fascinating to know where the United States would be wine-wise if we had had the luxury. Obviously, when you start looking across the pond, when you look at Europe, they've had centuries to figure out what grows best where, how it can be determined, what kind of grapes grow best. All you have to do is look at Burgundy and how it's classified and how many different regions they have and how many different appellations and crus and Grand Crus and everything else. But in the States, just when we got our feet under us, when we realized that, hey, we have some great grape producing areas, we can get something going, we can actually have our own fermented fruit, which out without having to take from Spain or from France, Prohibition came along. And in those 90 years, we lost the ability of research. We lost the ability of being able to name places. So not only did we have 90 years of, or I'm sorry, not only did we have 30 years of prohibition, but it put us so far behind the rest of the world that it's almost just now that we're finally identifying little microclimates, little areas where we know right here Cabernet grows best. We've had winemakers on the show that will talk about ripping out vineyards that have been around since the 50s and 60s. You get on the top of Howell Mountain and people have Chardonnay planted up there. And people in the past have been loath to tear out these vines because they're legendary. They've been around. They have age on them. But ultimately, if it's not growing well, it's not producing quality fruit, then we need to find something that will. We are truly just now in this decade. I know there's a lot of winemakers out there and a lot of vineyard managers who would say, oh, well, we've been doing it for ages. All you have to do is drive down Highway 29 and look at BV 1, 2, 3, or 4, or our vineyards such as, oh, I don't know, some of the Tokai vineyards, some of Opus's vineyards. Yes, we did know to a point, but it is only just now in this decade that we are truly learning our landscape, especially Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, Santa Barbara, Santa Ynez, what grows effectively where and to make the best of it. So we're going to investigate some of those ideas today. Of course, we're going to take your calls and emails like we usually do. But at this moment, we're going to take a small pause. And when we return, we will continue looking at the devastation that Prohibition did to the United States wine business.
Laura Lawson's got more Wine Crush in just a moment.
She had kisses sweeter than wine.
You've been hearing and seeing good things about Z-Max Micro Lubricant everywhere, and you're curious, what is Z-Max Micro Lubricant? Well, it's the only pure micro lubricant that penetrates into the metal of your engine to clean out deposit buildup, improve gas mileage, and your engine's performance. Go ahead, get a bottle, add Z-Max to your oil and gas. It's easy to do. Get Z-Max at a retail performance partner near you, and you'll experience a smoother, stronger running, better performing engine. Z-Max it.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective, it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial, plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Don't let your car or truck turn into a clunker. Z-Max. Z-Max, added to your oil and your gas tank, can clean internal engine components and fuel systems, reduce engine wear, and give you better mileage. Z-Max is a pure micro-lubricant that gives you a smoother, stronger-running, better-performing engine. These are some big claims, but they've all been backed up by some of the most rigorous testing in the industry. Z-Max Micro Lubricant, available at your favorite auto parts retailer.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Oh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUsKids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. We are continuing to talk about the devastation of prohibition on the wine business, but now at least I do have an expert to assist me and not my just my old little stories. It's great pleasure. Easy for me to say. With great pleasure that I introduce Miss Vivian Sosnowski, the author of When the Rivers Ran Red. Vivian, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thank you so much, Laura.
It is so nice to have you on the show today. It's fun. We're doing this show basically because it's the anniversary, so to speak, of Prohibition. When, you know, you look January 17th, that's when the devastating effects were announced. And recently I had come across your book, and you actually helped give me the idea for today's show. And it's hard sometimes in the wine business. You talk to authors, you talk to people, whether it's James Conaway or people who have spent time in Napa and Sonoma, but they everyone loves to write books about wine. Oh, this vintage is great. This vineyard is great. But you've managed to put together a comprehensive history with just some great stories, which to me is the lifeblood of the wine business. So
great.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your book and what the impetus was for creating this.
Well, the book happened kind of by chance. I was working on a history project in Sonoma, you know, one of the great wine counties of the United States. And I started to talk to a lot of people who were like 90, 95, 97. They told me all these stories about Prohibition, and I was like stunned. I couldn't believe people were still alive that had gone through Prohibition. They were telling me these stories, and I thought these stories need to be remembered and told, because Prohibition nearly took down the American wine industry, and it had a tremendous lasting effect on the kind of wines we were able to drink for many decades. So I wanted to tell their stories, their human, their family stories, because these were all family winemakers who were damaged. I wanted to tell those stories, but put it in a little bit of context so we knew how we got there and how we got out of it.
How long did it take you to put all this together?
Well, about 3 years, Laura. It was a labor of love because I got to meet so many winemakers and people who'd been in the wine industry for a long time. And I got to work with libraries across the state. So it was a wonderful time, and I enjoyed it a lot.
I think it's funny when people get a chance to meet winemakers or spend time with people who are in the industry, all they want to hear about is what's your favorite wine? What do you like to grow? No one really ever gets to tell their stories. So it's great to see these encapsulated. As you went through and you read, obviously reading the different libraries throughout Napa and Sonoma, talking to the different winemakers, what is one thing that ultimately stands out when you said Prohibition? Was there one general reaction that people gave you when you asked them about the history of this era?
Well, you know, there was. And what's interesting, Laura, is that some of the wineries that were damaged in Prohibition still run today. So these people still are on the same land, you know, sometimes even using the same vines. It's amazing the consistency over the years. The one thing that they do remember is that they were furious that their own government made them turn to crime, because although there was this amazing beginning in Prohibition for winemakers, I'll just fill you in a little bit. They all thought they were gonna they were all just, you know, have no income whatsoever. They didn't know what to do with their vineyards, these beautiful vineyards, some of which were 60, 70, 80 years old. They were selling wine around the world to France and China, and they were very successful. And all of a sudden, Prohibition came. Then they realized that people were coming from the rest of the states to buy wine grapes. And because there was a law that you could make 200 gallons of wine per household and not be taxed and not suffer any other difficulties with the law. So all of a sudden they were selling this tremendous amount of wine grapes across the states. They couldn't get enough trains to send them to New York and Atlanta and Boston and Philadelphia. And that lasted for some time. And during that period they used to say, this is Prohibition, bring it on, it's great. And then all of a sudden, too many grapes were produced. The Depression started. People couldn't buy so many grapes. All of a sudden, these people ended up again, absolutely no money coming into this to their land or their families. And they all, I think pretty well, nearly all of them turned to bootlegging. And they resented that, because these were proud families, a lot of immigrants who had worked hard. And they all told me the same stories. They were just furious that they were turned into, you know, their lives were criminal lives after that. Some went to jail, and I mean, some of the jail stories are funny because the jails were very relaxed out in Sonoma. But still, it was an indignity they didn't feel they should suffer.
And understandably so. These men were craftsmen. I know a lot of us don't necessarily think of that in that framework, but regardless, I know that if I had to grow a whole bunch of grapes and try and make wine out of it, it would probably be dismal by the time it was said and done. And I think people tend to operate on the assumption that just because you can put grapes and sugar and yeast in a vat and be done with it, you have to take time to make something that's quality. And these men truly were craftsmen. They were the top of their field. And then all of a sudden, they've had everything taken away from them. As you were working on your book, obviously you took a lot of different sources. Was there one family, one winemaker, one general person that really stood out and helped you more than anything else?
Well, there are two great wine families. There are many great wine families around in Sonoma and Napa. But two of them, the Fulpianos and the Segazios, which are the same families that lived through Prohibition, they were tremendously helpful to me. They still farm the same land. They still use a lot of the grapes and a lot of the blends that they did back in the day. Their traditions are long. Their family, they've just lived with the soil. They've lived with the weather. They've lived with, you know, these plants for a long time. These people are amazing experts, and their wine sells around the world for good reason.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's great now because people are truly appreciating the family wineries again. They're saying, oh, this is wonderful. But I have this stalwart belief when you talk about wine and you talk about the United States particularly, people have this idea that the wine creation and business began in 1960. It's where James Conaway picked up in his book Napa and talking about the Davies and talking about Heights and talking about the Barretts. And all of a sudden, it's like everyone has this mental image that 1960 is when the wine and grape business was created in California. And everyone wants to blow, oh, the 110 years before off that never exactly happened.
Oh, it's surprising. Oh, it's surprising to me. And I live in Sonoma. It was surprising for me to realize how many families. I met so many families that had been there a long time. And, you know, that all adds to the expertise that they have. It was, California and American wine won prizes in 1900 in Paris. The wine that has been made in America has been very, very famous for a long time. But the reason why we don't know so much about it early on is because Prohibition damaged those wineries so much. They had no money when Prohibition finally ended in 1933, and they couldn't make great wine. Some of them couldn't remember how to make great wine for a while, and all their equipment was wrecked, and they had no capital. So countries like Australia and France, who hadn't been impacted by Prohibition, kind of took over, and especially France took over as being the place.
Absolutely, as far as bringing it into the country. Hey, Vivian, we're going to have to take a small commercial break right here. Do you mind holding over, and we'll continue this conversation?
Lovely, Laura.
All right, we're going to take a small break. When we return, Vivian and I will look a little bit further at Prohibition.
Newsflash, finally there's something conservatives and liberals can agree on, gold. For thousands of years, gold has united mankind regardless of race, religion, or politics. Gold conserves wealth from financial uncertainty, a higher cost of living, and higher taxes. Yet gold also offers liberal benefits, such as growing in value by 300% since 2001. In fact, gold transcends left-right politics because its value is based on ultimate economic truth and substance rather than symbolic political promises. So, whether you're a conservative, liberal, or an independent, gold should be a part of your portfolio and family legacy. Call now 800-932-5146. That's 800-932-5146. Request their free 2010 DVD, CD, and Economic Realities Report. Call 800-932-5146 and ask about creating a gold IRA today.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air. Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
You're listening to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. I am fortunate to be joined by Miss Vivian Sanowski. She wrote When the Rivers Ran Red, the story of Napa and Sonoma during the Prohibition. Vivian, are you still with us?
I am, Laura.
It's always fun to look back on stuff and be able to poke fun at it. Obviously, we know the damage that Prohibition did to the wine industry. But when you look at your book, and I have read, I'm almost finished with it. I've read 99% of it. Looking at some of the stories you have, you had some great interviews where people would tell you ingenious ways how they kept their vintages, how they kept things separate. For our listeners, give them a taste of some of the neat stories on how things were hidden in your book.
Well, as anyone who's visited that, you know, the wonderful county wine counties of Napa and Sonoma, you know, it's a lot of lovely little twisting roads through the hills and, you know, down into valleys. Well, these were perfect places to hide stills, for families to work together. They made a lot of brandy with wine because it was easier to send that by car down to San Francisco, which then it was sent across the states. So a lot of people had stills, not only made wine, but they had stills. And they used to have stills that they would have little stills they would pass all around the street where everybody or all through vineyards, everybody would get to use the same stills. But other people had deals made with gangsters from San Francisco and elsewhere, and these gangsters would come to their homes. They always wanted to find homes with, say, barns that were by streams because you need a lot of water to distill liquor. And they would pay them good money, I mean staggering amounts of money for these poor farmers, to put up stills in their houses. And one family told me the story about a still. It was about the size of a small bedroom, and it worked 24 hours a day. And where these people, the gangsters, phoned up or came to over to the family one day, and the family's house was in kind of a low spot, so it got flooded a couple of times a year, which they loved because the prohibition agents couldn't come in during that period. Anyway, these gangsters came and said, we've got a vineyard with a huge storage amount of sherry we want to turn to liquor, And it happened to be about a mile from the farmhouse. So the gangsters actually dug a pipeline from this the winery to this farmhouse. They put a pipeline under the ground for a mile. They were so excited. They got the sherry started to flow to this farm, and all of a sudden they realized that the farmhouse had no electricity, which they needed. So they went and they tapped into the local electricity company, and they put another little wire along this, by this mile-long pipeline to bring electricity to the house. So not only were they stealing the sherry, they were also stealing the power to turn it into liquor. And this family, the memories of that were, you know, they were terrified, because when it started up, it made such noise. And even though they lived on a farm, they thought everybody in the whole community could hear them.
Absolutely. But when you look at the land around there, you always think that sounds travel too much than you really would like them to.
Especially if you've got this huge still the size of a bedroom going 24/7. You know, and there were lots of funny stories in jails. The local jail in Santa Rosa, the third floor, was just for bootleggers. And it was like full of family men. These were farmers and family men. And the children of these men who are still alive told me they would go every week or whenever they wanted, because you could bring food in. They would bring two bottles of brandy. One would go in the sheriff's desk, and one would be taken up to their dad so he could have a drink every day. And in fact, one of the people in the jail, he was a gangster from San Francisco. He'd had one of the biggest stills ever seen. It was producing gallons and gallons of liquor a day. Got caught, went to jail, and when he got to the jail, the sheriff found out that he was a great cook. And he said, well, you know, I need a cook for the people in jail. And he said, I'm going to give you a car. He gave a car that he had taken from some other criminals. And this fellow went out every day and drove about 15 miles up to the vineyards, spent the afternoon drinking with his friends, then would buy some vegetables from the farms on the way back, come back in, make wonderful meals for the people in jail. It was a loose place, but, you know, you still had to stay in jail.
Ultimately, you were still arrested, but at least you had some benefits. You could probably get alcohol easier in jail than you could actually out on your property.
I think they did not go a day without a drink, let's put it that way.
Never a bad thing. Well, of course, it's fun to hear the light side of that. It's fun to hear the stories. I have been privy to going to several of the wineries that were created in the early 1800s, and then you'll find strange rooms that are behind doors. They're behind literally rock walls, and you walk in, and now they're being used as cave storage. But they'll tell you the history. This is where we made wine. This is where we made brandy. This is where we made moonshine. I'll take it one step further. I'm fortunate to know a lot of these people and the family-oriented nature that you're talking about, and they all still have their stills. Not that they'd admit that out loud, but it's still a tradition that continues today. But the stories are outstanding when you can talk about the jail or you talk about the cars. But ultimately, as you did the research on your book, what would you say the impact was on the wine business? How devastating truly was it? I know I can't really get you to give me a dollar figure, but how many years behind did it put us versus the rest of the world?
I think it put us behind decades, frankly, Laura. You know, as I was saying, that there was no money for new equipment. Bottling started to happen after Prohibition. People didn't, before that, they used to put it into casks, and you would bottle it individually at groceries and that. And, you know, the bottling systems that people needed, they couldn't afford this. So what happened was a lot of jug wine was made, because that's what they could afford to make. And I think that really impacted on what Americans, and also what the rest of the world, thought about American wine for a long, long time, that it was cheap jug wine. And it really wasn't what they wanted to make, and it wasn't what they had been making for decades before Prohibition. So it did have a long-lasting impact that, you know, has taken us a long time to get past.
Ultimately, like you were saying, American wines won awards in 1900. Now, of course, everyone today thinks that American wines didn't do anything until 1976. But we were producing Cabernets, we were producing Zinfandels, we were producing amazing, amazing wine back then. And, of course, I don't know if when you were doing your research, did BV come up at all when you were looking in the book? Did you do much history on BV?
Well, they were part of the process. They had a lot of sacramental wine licenses, as many people did. Sacramento wine wasn't as big a deal as I thought it was. when I finally did all the research, yes, they went from like 2 million gallons a year to 7 million gallons a year of Sacramento wine, which makes you wonder exactly how they did that, but and how many more people were actually going to, you know, take services. But the reality was they were making much more wine secretly, and they were also, you know, the wine that was being made, this 200 gallons that you could make in every household, it wasn't just a boon to householders who could make a couple of hundred gallons a year, you know, which is nearly 1,000 bottles. But it was a great boon to bootleggers because they made 200 gallons and sold 200. They made 200 and
sold 200.
So it was a revolving door of wine.
Different household, just count them how you can.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of wine. The problem at the end of Prohibition, which is also another issue, was that many people in the United States had lost the taste for wine because what they thought was wine was the stuff that they made in their basements. And they didn't know how to make wine when Prohibition started, and they had learned to make wine. But, you know, as you say, you know, if we were left to make wine, it's not going to be a fancy grade of wine at all.
No, I think I would probably be safer trying to move toward vodka. Well, Vivian, thank you so much for being part of The Crush today. It's been great to hear your stories. Oftentimes we can get authors on, and of course their words jump off the page in the book, but it's truly been a delight to hear you tell the stories. You definitely relay them outstandingly well.
Thank you, Lauren. It was a real pleasure for me to speak with you today.
All right. Take care. Well, listen, we're going to take a break here on The Crush. When we return, we will have your calls, your emails, and a couple follow-up comments on the Prohibition experiment that was so terribly failed.
For pictures, videos, show recaps, and more, become a fan of Wine Crush Radio Group on Facebook.
GE Direct is a great source to help you get out of high credit card debt. When you call the number I'm about to give you, here's what you can expect. You'll speak with personally screened, we call them debt counselors. Their job is to listen to you, but be prepared to tell them your entire debt picture. We want to know who you owe and how much you owe. Then we'll talk with you about how much you can afford monthly to pay off your bills. And finally, we'll give advice on how you can pay off your bills and be debt-free in about 3 years. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call this number right now. 800-917-1329. 800-917-1329. A free 15-minute call can change your life. 800-917-1329. 800-917-1329. That's 800-917-1329.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you realize how impactful your kids involvement in the arts can be.
Grades, make more friends and express their individuality.
When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. A special thank you to Vivian and her creativity and her stories from When the Rivers Ran Red. Definitely hits home a lot with what we're discussing today in Prohibition. There are two things I do want to hit on that we didn't get a chance to finish. We talked about the sacramental wine and what I was getting at when Vivi and I were going back and forth about how we were making great wines in the 1900s, how we had quality that we were shipping all over the world. It is wineries like BV. Obviously, Teschelschef and George Latour in 1936 came out with the first true Cabernet bottling that had happened since Prohibition. And of course, that winery and that vineyard have not looked back since. It's because they were able to stay open, because they had the sacramental permits, they didn't have to rip anything out, and they weren't making the jug wine that we talked about. But it's interesting to look how Prohibition backfired in a sense. Obviously, it hurts the wine business, but one of the movements and one of the whole momentum of Prohibition came from the fact that liquor was running rampant. There was drunkenness with the brandy and the sherries. It was the liquor and the temperance movement that people were fighting. By the end of Prohibition, exactly like Vivian said, so many people had consumed so much bad wine that wine just went off people's radar. And the only time you were getting wine is if you were getting shipments from overseas. Of course, World War I, World War II definitely interrupted all that production. So it wasn't until the 1960s where America finally got back on its feet and was able to have good wine. Once again, if all of us had to go out tomorrow and make our own wine, I swear I'd be drinking scotch the rest of my life. So as we talk about the impact of Prohibition, it's important to really focus on those two things. One, we lost our taste for wine and are just now getting it back. But two, we lost our ability to know what was good, what was bad, and where to plant. I mean, if you can have 200 gallons, it wouldn't matter if it were Zinfandel, if it were white Zinfandel or Muscadine. It was a simple fact of whatever would grow best, wherever you could plant it and produce as much fruit as possible, because ultimately it was the end result of the alcohol is all that mattered.
So where do you think we would be today if we had not had Prohibition?
Number one, I think we'd have a much more wine knowledgeable, wine savvy base here in the United States. I think also that it'd be a situation where, not that I'm saying that there's anything wrong with the 21 drinking age, but it would be much more a form of a family gathering, family society. I mean, I remember when I was 6 or 7, just because my grandparents were who they were, we'd sit down, we'd have wine with dinner. Even I'd have my little thimble full of glass. Even at 6, it'd be watered down. So I think wine would be much more of our lifestyle, much more of our culture. Because if you go overseas, or if you look at Spain, if you look at France, if you look at England, it is always not necessarily drinking to drink for the sake of drinking, for drunkenness, but it's drinking as a social courtesy. It is definitely part of a cultural thing. And as we were founded by the Europeans, it's something that would have stayed intrinsic with us all the way through. So it would, I think, number one, we'd be more savvy. But two, I think you talk about the liquor industry, and that can just get off on its own set of tangents. But for some reason, people still have this idea, you know, whether it's that big masculine 6'4" man who's going to go to the bar and order his Manhattan, but refuses to look at a glass of Chardonnay because they have this idea that it's a wimpy beverage, or it's for girls, or it's effeminate. I don't think any of that would have happened. I think that would have been something out the window as well. I mean, you are slowly getting into the wine business as you hear what Vivi and I were discussing, and you think about these things. Do you see where they're impactful, or do you think it's just
I see
cluster?
It as part of our history. I do. I see it as a fascinating part of our history, because the thing that we learned out of the Prohibition is, you don't legislate morality. You don't take a problem like drunkenness and say, okay, we'll just outlaw it.
Exactly.
Because that's not the way humans work. We figure ways around it. I love her stories about how people just created pipelines going from this to the farmhouse and everything else. It's just amazing.
Well, Americans are ingenious. There's no two ways about it. And, of course, I'm sure there are many families out there, some of our political families, that would never have the wealth and never have what they had today without Prohibition.
Oh, sure.
I mean, Prohibition.
Oh, you're talking about the Kennedys, of course.
Come on, I'm right wing.
That's where Kennedy came from.
Exactly.
That's his history, yeah.
But, I mean, when you think about what stemmed from Prohibition, you know, it's bad enough it hurt the wine business. Would we deal with organized crime like we do now? Would we have, like I said, the wealth or the baron robbers or everything we had dealt with? It'd be interesting to see. I certainly think as a country we're worse off having had Prohibition. Unless, of course, you're a fan of NASCAR, then, of course, you're delighted because we all know
the whole
NASCAR
sport
came
was
from
born around it. Yeah.
The whole sport born around it. Now, see, of course, Vivian's interesting. She's out in Sonoma, Napa, and it doesn't matter what part of the country you're in. Of course, I think most of our listeners know that we're based in North Carolina, and bootlegging and moonshining and rum running is just a natural part of this whole area of the country.
But that's the creativity in all of this. See, when we could not legally do this, we got creative and got around it. And that's what Americans do.
We do. We're going to get what we want, yeah, one way or the
right.
other. There are no two ways about it. I actually went back, did some research on my family tree, and realized I think every single one of my great uncles, oh, they were all bootleggers. They yeah. all were shiners. They all did all that. So it's something that it becomes part of your culture and your history, but it's interesting to see it broken down and how it impacts us today.
Yes, absolutely.
So, sorry. Getting off on tangents. We're supposed to be a wine show, so I guess this kind of qualifies. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners that have sent me emails and texts and phone calls about the songs with Chardonnay in them. I am just now getting caught up. I had to spend some time on the West Coast, so now that I'm back, I am researching your songs. I am looking into it, and I know we have at least two winners. But listen, I need more songs, people. I can challenge you. I can go ahead and say, you got to find me that song with Chardonnay in it. I will step it up. I want songs with wine in them. I appreciate the fact I have at least two Chardonnays, and I think the number one response to that was Alanis Morissette's Ironic. There's something about a glass of Chardonnay in there. But I know there's more, and I expect you to find them for me.
We'll feature the first batch of new wine songs on the next show.
Okay, we can do that. So for our listeners, get them in. Email me, Laura Lawson at winecrush.com. Call us 877-4-CRUSH-1 or info@winecrush.com. There are so many different ways to get a hold of me. There's absolutely no excuse for you not to give me these songs. We're going to take a break right here. When we return, we will wrap up our investigation of Prohibition and talk about some great things coming down the pipe.
Need a wine recommendation for a party? Want Laura to address something on the show? Email her at lauralawson@winecrush.com.
Term life insurance. It can be a powerful way to protect your assets and your family. You work hard to earn and save your money to build a nest egg for the future. Don't let it get wiped out because you didn't plan ahead. Take the time now and make a small investment in $500,000 or more in quality term life insurance. Call the Term Lifeline and let us shop the best companies to give you the lowest rates. We specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. Ask about some of our 10 and 20 year fixed rate plans with guaranteed rates. Call the Term Lifeline right now for your free insurance quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. You owe it to yourself to protect your family and your assets. Make term life insurance part of that plan. Call the Term Lifeline right now. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
If you have high credit card balances and other unsecured debt, including medical bills and various personal loans, please listen to this free consumer alert from the CESI Debt Helpline. You can take control of your debt, but you need our help. Our partner companies negotiate millions of dollars in debt with the large credit card companies every month. We save our customers thousands of dollars in debt. These special programs do not offer loans, and debt reduction does not work on student, auto, or home loans. Call today and see how much we can save you. As a free consumer service, the first 100 people that call in right now will receive a free debt analysis. Learn how you can reduce your debt today with this free call.
Call us 24 hours a day at this number.
800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815. 6815.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chomping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood.
Hi-ya!
Concrete.
Hi-ya!
Brick walls.
Hi-ya!
Trees.
Hi-ya!
Small cars. It can even chomp through these 8 guitars. It chomps things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. A very, very special thank you goes out to Vivian Sosnowski, who wrote the book When the Rivers Ran Red. We did not get a chance to ask Vivian about her website, but of course the link, as always, will be on the Wine Crush website for you to check out this book. And whether you're a history buff, whether you're an upcoming enophile, whatever you adore about wine, this definitely crosses the gamut. The book is worth reading. It is a page-turner. It's not one of these big encyclopedias that will just give it to you very, very dry. This is something worth reading, and I encourage all of you who either are in the wine business or working with wine or just, like me, just love wine, to read this book because it will really help you hit home where we are today, how far we've come, and how great the United States wine business is. It goes back to what Kent and I were discussing. It talks about ingenuity. We're going to find a way around a problem. And the fact that I can sit here and talk about how far we're behind the rest of the world, but ultimately, when you sit back and look at whether you want to look at it in the category of ratings, whether you want to look in the category of productions, if you want to look at the dollar volume of wine business, we are up there. We're in the top three when it comes down to it. Now, consumption, that's a whole other ballgame, but I still think that's impact coming from Prohibition. But no matter how you want to look at it, we are still the young rising children when it comes to wine. There is nothing we can't produce. There's nothing we can't do. We have such a great divergent country that literally every type of grape known to mankind can be grown and grown well. So that leads me to my little lecture and my little soapbox today. Yes, of course, there are so many great wines around the world. Every country produces some sort of wine, something made from the fruit, and you definitely need to experience it. To be truly involved in the wine world, you have to have had Spain, France, Germany, Italy, Iceland, Tokaj, Hungary. You have to have this background. But for those of you who are just starting out and trying to get a handle on things, there is a wealth, a virtual plethora of great wines grown here in the United States. And we're all on the same learning curve. We're all moving forward. We're doing it by trial and error. So this ties back into my theme so far for this year. Go back and try things you haven't liked. Go back and try vineyards you may have forgotten about. Go back and try wineries that you may not know the history on or had a bad experience with. Because ultimately, as we all learn, as we all grow, we are changing the way we do things. And as we learn better places to learn grape, better places to grow grapes, more we learn about our climates, more we learn about our production, the more amazing wines we're going to see coming out of the West Coast, East Coast, Ohio Valley, everywhere. All right, as always here in The Crush, we are reminding you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told, but most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there's truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.